Get in tune with your body. That is the most important thing. I'm the doctor, but you're the expert on you. So you need to come to me with this information and not just go, well, what do you think I should do, doctor? That's great. And I'm happy to guide you. But you tell me what you've noticed, and then I can work with you so you feel really good around that.
Hello all, you are listening to the Capsule in Conversation podcast. I'm Natalie Anderson, and today I'm joined by the brilliant Dr. Seher Roked to talk hormonal health, the impact of gut health on your overall well-being, and the role of HRT in perimenopause. So sit back, relax, and get ready to join us in our conversation. Hello all, thank you so much for being with us today. I am very, very excited for our chat and brimming with questions for our lovely guest following Davina McCall's latest documentary, Sex, Mind and the Menopause. A practicing GP with a special interest in integrative medicine and hormonal health, widely providing expert commentary for Vogue, Elle, Tatler, Men's Health and The Telegraph, she is the go-to practitioner for keeping your hormonal balance in check. And I am so thrilled to welcome her today. She is the brilliant Seher Roked. Hi, Seher.
Hi, Natalie. What an amazing introduction. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Honestly, I am so, so thrilled to have you with me today. I know you're super busy. You're juggling life as a GP and your clinic. I do thank you for your time.
Oh, no, it's always a pleasure to speak with you.
I mean, there's so much to talk about, isn't there? You know, we've kind of like briefly mentioned it just before we started on this. But for the first time, the conversation around women's health and menopause and perimenopause in particular is front and center, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's so topical at the moment. And I think that's only a good thing that women are learning more about their health and their bodies.
And guys as well, you know, because again, this next phase of life, I mean, for me personally, that's kind of where I'm headed now. And it has a huge effect on everybody, your kids, your work colleagues, your, you know, your husband, your partners, whomever. And, you know, it affects everyone. So the more kind of we're aware of it, the better.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I saw a patient on Friday whose husband watched the documentary, and then the Davina McCall documentary, and then he dragged her in and said, we've got to watch this together now and we need to get you some help. And I think that is, I just thought, what an amazing husband. Like, that's so, so amazing. Yeah.
That is lovely. Because that, I think, for a long time, for a lot of women, has been such an issue that they've been kind of written off, and in the workplace written off, and with their partners written off. And there's been this lack of communication, lack of understanding, because we've had no education around this area, have we? Not really.
Yeah, definitely. And like, one of the reasons I do the work I do is because I always thought, this is so unfair. You know, a woman gets to her 50s, she should be in her prime, you know, maybe the children are a bit older now, work's flourishing, you know, maybe financially things are a bit better. And then menopause hits you and it's just a complete curveball. And whereas men seem to thrive in their 50s on, but for many years, women haven't been. And I've always felt so strongly about it and how it's so wrong, which is why I've been doing the work I've been doing around hormones and menopause for like over 10 years now.
I mean, your work is incredible. You know, you've only to go onto your Instagram account and you're like, oh, yes, help me. You're somebody knows, somebody understands. It's actually amazing. I just wanted to ask as well, has there been like a spike in calls since the documentary to your clinic?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the awareness is so high at the moment and people are just seeking help. And obviously GPs are really, really busy at the moment, still coping with the backlog from COVID and things like that. People want to see someone who understands hormones, who has a wide breadth of knowledge in it, and someone who can just go, yeah, this is what's going on and this is what you need to do. So I've definitely seen an upspike, and, you know, obviously trying to do things on social media and things as well, so people just have a little bit more information if they go see other people as well.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? You see, I read this and I've heard it as well from other professionals that, and this is, you know, no disrespect to GPs, because as you say, I know they work so, so hard, but you can qualify to be a GP without necessarily covering the menopause in depth. So not every GP will be a specialist in that area. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Because if you think a GP's got to know a little bit about everything, so it's really hard to be maybe specialized in one area. And lots of GPs are, because there's something something they're interested in. It could be hormones or dermatology or maybe respiratory problems, and they will specialize in that. But generally, women's health, when I qualified as a GP, or I was doing my GP training in around 2009, the guidance at that time was really different to what it is now. And I was basically told, look, it's really bad if a woman wants to take HRT, tell her not to do it. If she wants to do it, tell her she might get breast cancer, and then on her head be it. Basically, that was the rough guidance. And I think what's really incredible is how far we've evolved since then, because the information is completely different. We've learned now that that breast cancer study was really flawed, so we shouldn't be scared of taking hormones as women. Of course, you need an informed discussion with your practitioner who can really inform you on your personal risks and things like that. But there's definitely no reason to be scared of hormones. And it's so great that people like Davina are really letting other women know, using her platform, which she could be using to do so many other things, but using it to publicize how important women's health is.
This episode of the Capsule in Conversation is brought to you by Harrogate Springwater. Famous for its waters since 1571, Harrogate is Britain's premium natural source water. I watched my mum really struggle with her hormones, and it was to a point where we were having run-ins and I couldn't get my head around it, because I was like, I don't get it. Like, why is my mum suddenly so forgetful, and why is she acting like she's frightened of everything? Like, for me, she'd always been Superwoman, and I found it really difficult, and we had a really good heart-to-heart about it, and it made me angry that she didn't receive, I felt, enough support. And also thinking about, okay, so if my mum struggles with her hormones, I must as well at some point. So I know I do anyway. I know I do with my anxiety and stuff. But so if there's a hereditary case, what should I be looking for? What do I need to be aware of? You know, what's my life going to be like when I'm approaching these later years? Which is why I feel incredibly passionate too, because I just think, when I look at women around me, as you said, you know, that are hitting this peak and they should be thriving, and instead they're in this crux of awful kind of depression, even, you know, suicidal thoughts and feeling like they need to leave their jobs. I mean, it's better, I think, that we are becoming way more educated. I mean, can you describe, because when I speak to a lot of women, like especially in their 30s, they go, oh, what are you talking about that for? You know, why do you keep going on about that? But I'm like, really, we should be aware, because, you know, if you describe the initial symptoms, especially of perimenopause, it starts a lot earlier than people think, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely can start in your 30s. Actually, we probably have a natural decline in our hormones from our late 20s on. Right. You know, you might not be having symptoms per se, but the awareness is the first part. So I always say to people, the first stage is to get really in tune with your cycle. Know what's going on. Like, you know, as women, we've been accustomed to just accept things, you know, oh, I don't feel well around my period. Oh, I'm moody. Oh, I bloat. Oh, it's just part of being a woman that I get acne once a month. No, it doesn't have to be, you know, we're just so like accepting of these things. Like, oh, you know, it's all terrible, but it really doesn't need to be. If we can get in tune with our bodies at an early stage, then we're going to pick up other changes as they happen quicker. And I think that's key. So it's not so much like just waiting in dread, oh gosh, when's my 50s going to hit and I'm going to like stop having my periods, or late 40s quite commonly these days I see as well. But just to go, okay, let me get in tune with my cycles. If I notice any changes, I can do things. And it might not be straight away taking hormones. It could be, how can I eat differently around my cycle? What about my exercise? Are there any supplements I should be taking? Just get really in tune. And, you know, I always think as women, we do ourselves this disservice, because we kind of see our feminine energy and our hormones as a downfall. Mm. But actually, if we learn how to harness them, they are our greatest strength, our superpower. So the more we can get in tune with our hormones, the better every area of our life is going to be anyway.
And those initial, like you say, getting in tune with your body, but what would be the things that we would start to notice, like more commonly, that you would associate with perimenopause?
Okay, so with perimenopause, quite often things that people notice, it's not really hot flushes. People always think about menopause as being a hot flushes thing. It's normally changes in your mood. It can be a change in your cycle. It could be a change in the way you experience PMS, premenstrual syndrome. So maybe it's getting a bit worse. Maybe you're a lot more tired. Maybe you're bloating a lot more. Maybe you notice skin changes around your period. And these are the maybe things you can live with. They're not stopping you doing anything, but things you're subtly aware of. And it's at that point where you're becoming aware of it to take a little bit more notice and go, okay, all right, I'm a bit more tired before my period. Oh, I was really snappy, actually. I couldn't really focus at work very well for those few days or a week before. And then we go, okay, maybe we need to start looking into it a bit more.
And the documentary pointed out something that I found really interesting, which was that perhaps, you know, HRT should be offered earlier to women in their 40s. Do you agree with that?
I do, yes. So a lot of the women I see are in the perimenopause. Mm. And one of the reasons for that is because traditionally, if you go see the GP, they will say, oh, I can't really start HRT till your periods stop. And actually, the perimenopause can often be a lot worse than when you're actually in menopause, because in perimenopause, you have fluctuating hormone levels. So you can get highs and lows, you know, mood swings, you can get heavy periods and then no periods. Periods where you can't focus at all. So you get a lot of fluctuation. You can sleep for a while and then you can't sleep at all for a few weeks. So a lot of women come to see me at that stage because they're like, I can't wait until my periods stop. I feel so horrendous. Is there something we can do about it now? And we generally put in the interventions. And that could be maybe even 5 or 4 years before their periods completely stop. But it's giving them that quality of life back then for those 4 or 5 years, which, as we've said already, can be quite key years in terms of your work, your career and your family.
And, you know, you talk about bioidentical hormones. Can you just explain kind of what they are and what that is for me, please?
Definitely. Yeah. So I generally use body and bioidentical hormones. What that broad term means is that the hormones you're taking have the same chemical structure as what your body should be making. So your body can metabolize it better. So it's thought to be associated with less risks. The term body identical is the term given to those hormones that are made by a drug company, but have the same chemical structure. And bioidentical hormones are generally custom made. So that's by a regulated pharmacy, but they custom make them in different doses, in different forms, just to give the woman more choice. Because sometimes the ones that are available by a drug company maybe don't suit the person and they need something a bit different. So it's just giving the woman more choice. With my patients, it's probably about 50-50 that I use body identical and bioidentical. So I don't think there's anything wrong with either. Obviously, you need to see a practitioner who understands them. Sometimes people say that bioidentical hormones aren't regulated. Well, that's because they're not made by a drug company, but the pharmacies that make them do have their regulations in place as well.
We're seeing there's HRT shortages as well at the minute. And so like a lot, you know, and lots of women are really, really struggling. If they can't get hold of HRT, you know, what are there any holistic methods or practices that can help alleviate symptoms?
Definitely. So hopefully this shortage will be over soon because it's really difficult for a lot of women out there. So what I've been doing with my patients is that there are some HRT still available. So looking at switching them, maybe not from the one they're used to taking, but to a slightly different one, just so they're not with without hormones at all. Obviously, sometimes this is where the custom-made hormones come into play as well then, because I can get them made something that is very similar to what they've been taking just for the interim while we're waiting for what they normally take to come back in stock. What isn't a good idea is buying off the black market. We don't know what's in these hormones. We can't vouch for them. It could cause more damage than good. So that's not a good idea. But I'd say the first stage is definitely speak to your doctor because there are some things available. Obviously, seeing someone who can do custom made if that is something you need. But obviously, maybe trying to look at alternatives with the drug company first. And then in terms of other modalities, of course, other things are always important, such as you know, supplements. So things like the menopause supplements, which are things like red clover, black cohosh, that could be a good short-term solution as well. Looking at lifestyle as well, because the better lifestyle is, hopefully the less symptoms you're going to be having as well. Other supplements like Agnus Castus can help balance the hormones too. Omega-3 can reduce inflammation. B vitamins help you metabolize your hormones better. And then I'm all for other modalities as well, whether that's things like acupuncture or massage, anything that's reducing that stress hormone is going to be a benefit too.
Because that's the thing, like once these hormones get out of whack, and it can be like even your cortisol, you know, what your thyroid's doing, everything, when it all goes all over the shop, then you're just hit with a wall of symptoms, you know, tiredness, which is so bad that you can't get to the gym, which you would need to kind of get yourself out of it. And so I've got these supplements, which I really like, the perimenopause ones from Health and Her. And I found they've been really, you know, helpful to me. And I mean, I don't even know if I'm definitely in the perimenopause or not yet. But as far as I'm aware, I'm thinking, well, I'm 41 soon. So I kind of would expect to be in coming into that area. So surely it can't hurt for me to start taking these supplements now.
Yeah, definitely won't hurt. I'd say, you know, maybe at your stage and around your age, it is good to do exactly what you're doing, monitoring your cycle, monitoring your changes around the cycle. Do you notice any changes in sleep, mood, energy, bloating, skin, focus, and then just being aware of that. But yeah, anything you can do to support that is a good thing. And it might not be taking hormones at the moment, mm-hmm. but it could be, like you said, doing things like supplements. Maybe, if possible, I know you're a very busy lady, but changing your schedule a little bit around these ones. It might be impossible, but you know, maybe just start thinking about it a little bit. Even little things like changing the way you exercise around your cycle can have a big benefit. So doing more of your high intensity in the middle of the cycle when you're ovulating and your estrogen should be at the highest. And when you're premenstrual and the estrogen is dropping off and the progesterone is as well, maybe doing things like walking, a little bit of strength, more yoga and Pilates. So you're not putting extra strain on the body and increasing that cortisol, which could then lead to worsening female hormone symptoms.
It's such a fine balance, isn't it? You know, I know we've spoken before about that, about the role of exercise and how you exercise around your cycle. Because I just used to just hit a wall, like I've gone, you know, I've done really well for 3 weeks. And then suddenly I'd be like, I can't do anything. And then I'd be so disappointed. Whereas now, after speaking to you, I've managed to kind of tailor my workout so that there is 1 week where instead of doing a run, I'll just go for like an hour's walk, which I end up kind of getting the same benefits. You know, I'm still feeling great, but I'm not, as you said, overexerting myself and then making that cortisol spike because you're stressed and everything else. So that's been really, really helpful for me. And I think if anyone is listening, to just, again, check in with your cycle and when you're most tired and look at how you can, you know, switch up those exercise routines, because then you'll be more consistent across the months.
Hello, I'm Florence Given, best-selling author of the book Women Don't Owe You Pretty, and I have a new podcast called Exactly. In this first season, we'll be diving into five big topics: sex, social media, feminism, relationships and body image, and exploring them all from different angles. I'll be chatting to some amazing guests, from psychologists and doctors to cultural commentators and celebrities. Out now. Listen and follow Exactly with me, Florence Given, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, obviously our hormones have a huge effect on our mental health, and you know, the role of like progesterone and testosterone. You know, can you just talk me through that balance too, please?
Yeah, definitely. So progesterone, nowadays, it's generally prescribed in a more bio or body identical form, which is great, because in the past, and still, you know, with some doctors, you know, you get the synthetic progestin, and all that does is protect your womb, which is obviously important.
Yeah.
You don't get any symptom benefits. Now, when you're having a cycle, after you ovulate, which is normally in the middle of the month, you get a surge of progesterone. Biologically, that's to thicken the lining of the womb so that a fertilized egg can implant. Even if you're not planning on getting pregnant, this happens every month. So progesterone is a really good feel-good hormone in that second half of the cycle. It should help with things like mood, sleep. It's also good for hair and skin and fluid retention. So I call it a girl's best friend. That's all the things you want more of, right? All very important things for us women. And if we've got some of them, we want more of all of them. So when you're pregnant, you produce a lot of progesterone to sustain this pregnancy, which is why often after you're over the sickness bit, a pregnant woman generally feels really good, calm, serene. She's got that beautiful glow. The hair's amazing. And that's progesterone. So progesterone, like I said, has been overlooked in conventional HRT prescribing for a while, but now it's coming forward with the bio and body identical type so that women can experience better mood, sleep, hair, skin, and less fluid retention with their hormone treatment. In terms of testosterone, again, it's been an overlooked hormone because we always think of that as a man's hormone. Now, of course, men do have a lot more testosterone than women, but that doesn't mean that we don't need a little bit as women. And that definitely does decline from about 30 onwards. Now, testosterone in very small doses can be so helpful for things like mood, energy, motivation, focus, concentration, building muscle mass, burning fat, and of course, sex drive. Mm-hmm. So super, super important. When I prescribe testosterone, I prescribe it in quite a small dose compared to what I give a man. If I'm seeing a man, I might start him on 50 milligrams a day. If I'm seeing a woman, probably around 1 milligram or even sometimes less if we're being cautious, because women always worry, I don't want to break out, I don't want to get hairs where I don't want them. And I don't want that for you either. So testosterone is really, really important. And, you know, like they said in that Davina documentary, which really resonated with me, you know, three hormones decline in menopause, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. Why are we only replacing one or two? We should be replacing all of them.
Yeah. And as you said, you know, testosterone is so important in terms of like libido and the sex drive. And that's where a lot of couples really struggle, don't they, in this next phase, is that, you know, a woman doesn't necessarily kind of, she just doesn't want to have sex or might not want to and can't really understand why. And then the guy might feel, or the other partner might feel, like they're being pushed away, and then there's a distance. And again, it's so important to have these open conversations, isn't it? Just so you can, people can kind of go, it's not you, it's, I don't know what's going on, but there is help for us in you know, couples having these open conversations, because it's so upsetting when you think couples aren't connecting and through no fault of their own, really, you know. And if there's something that, you know, can be helped and can be offered, can you up your testosterone in other areas, like in food?
So food's a little bit trickier, but having foods with a lot of zinc in can help testosterone production. And also exercise does boost testosterone as well, especially weights and things like that as well. So that helps to boost testosterone. Now, what I generally see, which is the tricky bit, is that sometimes women come to see me and they're so low, they don't have any motivation to do these things like eat well, get enough protein, make sure they're getting zinc-rich foods, go to the gym. So sometimes starting on the hormones gives them that little bit of motivation. So when I see them 3 months later, they're like, oh, I'm back in the gym now, I'm cooking again. You know, I'm not just eating sugar all the time. So it has a sort of like multifactorial effect, you know. So sometimes we know we need to do something, but because we don't feel good, we can't quite do it. So sometimes a little bit of hormone balancing can help you make the changes in your lifestyle too.
Oh my God, I bet people come to you and are just like, you've saved my life. Like, they must be, it must be so rewarding for you with your patients. You also talk a lot about the impact of gut health as well, you know, and how that can impact your mental health. And again, the very delicate balance there. And there is something that's called, is it SIBO, S-I-B-O? Yeah. You know, can you just talk me through that as well?
Yeah, so SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, isn't very well known, actually. It's not really recognized by a lot of conventional doctors, but it's definitely kind of what it says on the tin, an overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine. So people often come with things like bloating, pain. It can vary between diarrhea and constipation, and just real issues around foods, just feeling they can't eat anything without looking like they're like at a full-term pregnancy, basically. There are tests you can do to find out if you have this, and then it can be treated with antibiotics or supplements as well. And again, what's really important about balancing your gut health is it affects every system in your body. So if your gut health isn't good, it's not just necessarily gut symptoms you have, like bloating, pain, although that's all very uncomfortable and quite distressing, but it can cause brain fog. So you can't think clearly, you can't focus at work. It can cause breakouts on your skin. So skin isn't as good. It can cause some hair loss. It can definitely affect the way you process your hormones as well. So sometimes it's about looking at the root cause of the problem. And I'm a big fan of looking at lifestyle. So hang on, what's going on in your diet and your exercise and things that could be causing your issue? Is it stress? I talk about that a lot. We've talked about that before. But also, what's going on with your gut health? Is there an imbalance in your gut microbiome that could be causing some of the issues you're having? And then if there is, if there's something like a bacterial overgrowth or a parasite, we can treat that and get rid of it. And then we can build up the good bacteria with supplements or certain foods as well to help improve the microbiome and improve the health overall.
I mean, again, it's just such a delicate balance, isn't it? Balancing the body, balancing everything, really. And would you suggest that people start making a food diary and then noting their symptoms when they're struggling with things like that?
Definitely. One of the things I recommend to people is maybe download My Fitness Pal and put a record in there of everything you're eating for 2 weeks and look for the patterns. I think it's also really important to see how you feel around the food you eat. So afterwards, do you feel tired? Do you feel sluggish? Do you feel bloated? Because even just that can give you a lot of information about what's going on and how your body's reacting to certain things.
Skipping back again just to the perimenopause area, a lot of my friends actually have been talking about this recently, that they've still not had children yet, or you know, they want to have children but they're in their now early 40s. And when we were watching the documentary, and they were like, oh my God, you know, am I going to really struggle if I have a baby and I'm going through perimenopause at the same time? It's making like a lot of people that I know quite worried that what will they really suffer with postnatal depression. Do you know anything about that area? What is there anything that, you know, any advice?
Yeah, I see patients in similar situations. And really, I think that I wouldn't be too fearful of that if I were your friends. I'm in a similar position myself, actually, so I can talk from experience. I'd say as long as your periods are regular, that's a good sign. If you're unsure about what your hormone levels are doing and you're concerned about fertility, maybe go see someone and get a test done. So you've got all the information you need. Maybe get a scan of the womb to make sure everything's looking healthy. In terms of, you know, whether you'd need more support during the pregnancy, potentially, but that's something you could talk to about the with the obstetrician, if that's the route you're going down. In terms of things like postnatal depression, not necessarily. Not necessarily at all, because lots of women in their 20s and 30s have had postnatal depression. And really, again, we just have a lot more awareness of these things than perhaps our mothers did. You know, it wasn't really a thing for them back in the day. Mm-hmm. But now that we're aware of it, perhaps you can put extra support in place. You can look for the symptoms. You can discuss it with your friends or your partner. Like, you know, I'm worried this thing's going to happen to me after I have a child. And they can look out for the signs and support you with that as well. So there's lots of things you can put in place. I definitely wouldn't be fearful of it if you're in your early 40s and start panicking about it. But I would say at that age, to definitely be mindful of it. So not panicky, but start looking at your options and seeing what you can do if having a child and fertility is important to you.
Because I know you've been very open about your fertility on your Instagram, you know, yeah, and talking about your egg freezing journey. And I know that there are various women looking at this option, you know, high profile women like Vicky Pattinson and even Amy Hart, who's very young, you know, and she's talked about it quite openly. We had Dr. Zoe on, Dr. Zoe Williams on earlier, and she was saying, you know, unfortunately, fertility is the one area that we can't kind of fight against. You know, our skin looks great. You know, we're really able. We can get about. We've got loads of energy. But our fertility is the one thing that we can't change.
Yeah.
Just talk me through kind of that process and, you know, the options for women if they are worried about their fertility dropping and, you know, looking into freezing their eggs as an option. Is it difficult? Yeah. Is it scary?
Yeah, so I had my eggs frozen around 37 or 38. I'm 41 now. And the reason I had it done is because one of my friends had it done. It was kind of on the back of my mind because we've been talking about it, which is why I'm very open about it. Because I think the more people talk about it, the more it can help other people. So I went and got a blood test done called AMH, anti-mullerian hormone. And because I kind of keep myself quite healthy, I was quite shocked that it was on the lower end. And it kind of sent me into a bit of a spiral, if I'm being honest.
Right.
I'm like, oh my God, I don't have that many eggs left. I'm really worried now. So I thought, right, I spoke to a good friend. She said, what would you tell your patient to do? I said, I'd say, go see a great gynecologist, which I did. And I know some, obviously. We did a scan. We had a chat. And he said, look, you can probably get your eggs frozen in the next year. I thought, no, why wait? Let's just get it done straight away. So that's what I went and I did. And in terms of the process, I did find it scary myself. It was a lot. And lots of appointments and blood tests and taking lots of medication. But I guess from a medical background, that didn't worry me so much. I shared it with a lot of people around me at the time. I told work so that they could be supportive. I wasn't always going to be in or feeling at my peak. I talked to friends about it so they could support me through it as well. And I was really glad I did it. I'm not sure if I'm going to do anything with it, if I'm being honest. I'm still not at that stage where I'm 100% sure what I'm going to do, but I've only got a few years to make up my mind, really, right? But I'm just really glad I did it because it felt like a really empowering thing to do for myself. We can't control everything, of course, but it made me feel like I was doing something positive for my future and for my health. And who knows what will happen with it, but at the time I was pleased with the decision I made.
I think that's so, you know, incredible of you to be open and to share that, because there'll be so many women really faced with this kind of idea of like, okay, what do they see for their future? And they might not have met the right person or whatever, and then they're falling into relationships that they don't want to be in. And as you said, you know, it's more of an empowering and liberating choice to kind of make that decision for yourself, so that actually if you decide to come to it later on, the option is there, rather than you get into that point and suddenly your body has, you know, done its thing, and there doesn't seem to be a kind of move forward in that area just yet, does there, in terms of fertility and prolonging fertility?
No, not at the moment, although I'm sure it'll be completely different in 10 years or 20 years, of course, but I can't wait for another 10 years. I should do it now, really. My gynecologist told me a great story when I went to see him, and he said that he had been dating someone. She was in her late 30s at the time. And then he thought the relationship was going well, but she just dumped him out of the blue and he was heartbroken. And then obviously he moved on with his life and things. And he met her many years later and he asked her why. And she said it was because she had to have a child at that stage and he wasn't ready. So she had to move on with her life and find someone who was ready at that time. But she didn't think it would be helpful to speak to him about it because she didn't want to try and like force him down a route, you know. So he said to me, he thought what I was doing was really great, just to give myself more options and to not try and put pressure on things as well. Because he said, then if you meet someone, you don't want to put the pressure on it to be like, I need to have a baby now because I've only got so many eggs. But yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd say to women out there is that my only little thing is that I maybe wish I'd done it a little bit sooner, maybe in my early 30s. And then maybe I'd have done a few more rounds of it as well. Mm-hmm. So that would be my only advice, is that if that is something that you're thinking of, don't put it off, really start investigating it and look at doing it as soon as you can. That would be my advice.
Again, so refreshing to hear that, because people just think, you know, I'll put it off, put it off, put it off. But actually, like you've just said, you know, the amount of relationships and, you know, that could survive, or, you know, positions that women are in that could be different if they would so, you know, want to. It opens up so much more choice for women, doesn't it? And I think that's the main thing, is the freedom of choice.
Definitely.
You know, going back to the stress and the impact of stress on your hormonal balance, you know, just talk me through that as well, and kind of, again, the fine balance of what we need to be looking at.
Yeah, so stress has a massive impact on health and also hormones. Cortisol is one of our stress hormones, and it's very inflammatory. And actually, cortisol is linked to your female hormones. So if your cortisol is very high or very low, it'll have a direct impact on your female hormones. So I spend a lot of time personally trying to manage my stress hormones. I think it's really important. It's something I talk to with nearly all my patients about, because I think it's really important. And I think that we've all been wearing this badge of honor of, oh, I'm so busy and I'm so stressed, and it's part of life and it's showing I'm successful and I'm doing a lot, but actually it can be quite damaging to our health. So I think it's really important to weave in different ways of managing your stress, just because it can have quite a negative impact on your hormones. And what I see when I do HRT with women in the menopause is sometimes at the beginning, it's working really well. Then maybe after 6 months or 9 months, they come back, so it's not working anymore. Sometimes I check their levels and their levels are really good. So I'm like, well, the levels are good, but you don't feel good. What else is going on? And quite often, they haven't addressed maybe a stress issue. It can sometimes be a sugar issue with inflammation and you know, too much bad sugars in the diet and things like that. But that's also linked to your cortisol, because if you have a lot of sugar in your diet, it can be damaging to your cortisol production as well.
Really?
Yeah, so all these things are really interlinked. So like my favorite thing to do when someone comes in is to look at all these areas. What's going on with their sugars? Is there any insulin resistance? What are their stress hormones doing? Female hormones, thyroid, and then just some like general lifestyle checks as well. So what we kind of do a lot in medicine is compartmentalize everything. So we're like, oh, these are your hormones. This is your gut. You know, this is your neurological stuff. But actually, it's all massively linked. And we need to look at it all as a whole, because you could be doing something in one area of your health that's having a negative impact in another area. So that's why you kind of, first of all, I would say, get in tune with your body. That is the most important thing. I'm the doctor, but you're the expert on you. So you need to come to me with this information and not just go, well, what do you think I should do, doctor? That's great. And I'm happy to guide you. But you tell me what you've noticed, and then I can work with you so you feel really good around that. And then the second thing is just to look at everything as a whole, because, you know, our body is also interconnected on a cellular basis. So we can really focus on everything altogether.
Because this is the thing about you, which I absolutely love, because I feel like I am really in tune with my body. And if I went, well, I actually did go to my GP and said, right, I think it's this. I can't concentrate on the road. I think it's this. I'm shaking when I've had coffee, da, 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 da. And she just didn't really know what to do with me. But you are, you know, you bring in so many different elements to the way that you kind of work with your patients, you know, spirituality and well-being, holistic approaches alongside traditional medicine. And, you know, if your GP isn't particularly sympathetic or understanding, do you then just say, right, we'll look for a second opinion, or where could somebody go?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's why I think having the information is a good start, because if you can explain it to the GP and why you think certain things go, then maybe they'll go, oh, maybe you're right, you know, and because you're basically making your case for yourself, you're yeah. advocating for yourself. So I think that's really important. I think if you're doing that, but you still don't really feel you're getting the answers you want, definitely seek out another opinion. And if the doctor doesn't think it's what you think it is, then hopefully they should be able to explain that and then give you an alternative. Because sometimes I do that with patients. They might say, I think it's my thyroid. I listen, maybe do some tests. I explain then why I don't think it's their thyroid based on the evidence that I have, but I think it could be something else. Because I think what's really frustrating for patients, and this is the reason I went into the work that I'm doing now, is because as a GP, people coming to me with problems, could be sleep or mood or whatever, I would do some blood tests and go, your blood tests are normal. Bye. They'd go, but I still feel terrible. And I'd be like, well, I don't know what to do with that, because the bloods are all normal. So then I thought, this isn't right. There must be something else going on. So I started looking at different ways of approaching health and different modalities and lifestyle and supplements and other hormone balance and things like that. So I think that if your doctor can give you an alternative of what they think might be going on, and then you go down that path and investigate it, then I think that that's good and that's helpful. But if not, then seek out a practitioner who can, because there are loads of great GPs out there. You know, you don't go into being a GP if you don't want to help people. But I think sometimes the system doesn't really support that. Mm. But there are good GPs out there. You just need to find one that you connect with as well.
I mean, everyone should have you, basically. You know, before we finish up, I just want to ask you, what products or practices would you recommend for protecting your overall well-being? You know, just go-tos for our listeners.
Ah, okay. So I think, like I said, lifestyle's always key. So you have to, well, you don't have to, you can do whatever you like, but I would recommend that you have some sort of practice that supports good health, whether that's some sort of exercise you enjoy. And I would say, if you don't enjoy the exercise you're doing, find an exercise you do enjoy. Because we can all find something, whether that's walking or yoga or a dance class, find something that supports your health. Same with nutrition. You don't have to be a saint and never have that chocolate cake, but make sure that there's something in your nutrition every day that's supporting your health, whether that's salad or a smoothie in the morning or something like that. Because it's these consistent things that make a difference, not what we do once in a while, not going on that yoga retreat, you know, just for 1 week every year, which is obviously great. But what can you do for the other 51 weeks of the year, you know? In terms of supplements, I think that a good, like you mentioned, a good women's multivitamin can be supportive. And then maybe considering something like vitamin D, because that's really good. Maybe not as useful in the summer, but definitely in the winter, that can be supportive for your health. B vitamins are really good for helping you to balance your hormones. And then some sort of practice that helps you balance your stress hormones. It doesn't have to be yoga or meditation necessarily, although both are great and have good evidence for reducing stress hormones. It could be a you know, little ritual in the evening where you light a candle and do a little bit of journaling and reflect on your day. It could be that warm bath with the bubble bath and the candles and maybe some nice music. It could be listening to your favorite tunes in the morning as you're getting ready. Just something that resonates with you that's going to help balance the stress hormones. So I think lifestyle is really, really key. And then if you can do other little things now and again, like maybe go for some acupuncture or have a massage once in a while, just a nice treat for yourself, I think that that's always supportive, because it's showing your body and your mind that you have your back. You're looking out for yourself. You're not just running yourself down, going on empty, just putting everyone's needs above yourself, work, family, friends, social life. You're actually doing some little things for yourself. And those positive things will send little messages to your brain that you can trust yourself. You've got your own back and you're looking after yourself.
Oh, you're so brilliant. Honestly, I wish you were like everywhere. Honestly, you would make people feel so much better. I mean, we sadly have run out of time for today, but it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with me and to listen to your incredible, brilliant advice.
I've absolutely loved talking to you today.
Thank you so much. For more from Sahar, you can follow her on Instagram at @DrSo_hormones_and_health. You can also visit her website, www.drsaharroquette.co.uk, where you'll find more information and support surrounding hormonal health and your overall well-being. For more well-being, fashion and beauty from us, you can visit us at our website, www.thecapsule.co.uk. You can also catch up with our previous podcast episodes by visiting the In Conversation page and subscribing to any of our podcast channels and YouTube. Please do feel free to leave your rates and reviews. I absolutely do love hearing from you. You can also drop us a message at our Instagram at @officialcapsule. I will be back next week with another fabulous guest for more conversations of inspiration, but all that's left for us to say today is goodbye. So it's goodbye from Sahar.
Bye, everyone.
And goodbye from me. This episode of The Capsule in Conversation was brought to you by Harrogate Springwater. Bottled at source, Harrogate Spring offers a pure, refreshing taste with a delicate blend of naturally occurring minerals and electrolytes, perfect for healthy hydration.